Robin D.G. Kelley on the Black Radical Tradition, and for his book, Freedom Dreams, just give us a call, 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just give us a call, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Tracy Chapman.
Don't you
talking
know,
about a revolution.
Talking about a revolution sounds don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a gonna rise up, get their share.
Hi, I'm Jill Frist with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our
Rise
website
them up,
at kboo.fm to verify if the meeting is being held.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, a special report from Lahore, Pakistan. Pakistan's powerful army chief publicly admits that he conspired against elected Prime Minister Imran Khan, who was overthrown in a U.S.-backed coup in 2022. Also, Sonoma County house cleaners and domestic workers commemorate Valentine's Day by picketing an employer who won't comply with a court order to pay a house cleaner her unpaid wages. And Code Pink's plans to rage against the war machine are starting to take shape. We're going to hear all about that. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We broadcast every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network here in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're happy to have you along today, and we're always honored, and it's always a privilege to welcome my first guest. Her name is Renee Salcedo, and she's been fighting for the people one way or another for probably more years than she wants me to mention, but Renee Salcedo with Almas Libres, fighting the good fight as always, and you're in the middle of a battle, essentially, to get some of the people who do the hardest work in this country to just get their basic pay from the folks who they worked for. You want to lay this out for us?
Yes. Hello, Dennis. Always a pleasure to be here with you. My organization is called Almas Libres. We're a project of the Raices Collective here in Sonoma County, and we're a grassroots group of immigrant and indigenous women who whose empowerment is supported through leadership development and campaigns. And so what's happening is, unfortunately, for too long, domestic workers are among low-wage workers who many times are forced to survive what we call wage theft. Domestic workers are house cleaners, they're caretakers, they are predominantly women of color here in California and all over the country, who not only get their wages stolen from them, but they also suffer other forms of abuses and exploitation, such as no workers' compensation when they're injured on the job. Here in California, they're still not covered under health and safety protections of CalOSHA. They suffer all forms of harassment inside people's homes, including physical and sexual, and just the general demeaning and disrespect that they receive in such an important industry. The services that they provide are so important because they allow others, namely private homeowners, to be able to work outside the home, and because these women care for their home. So that, in a brushstroke, is generally what's going on.
Well, let's say a little bit more with some more details about the dangers that women often face. I mean, it's extraordinary that they're brutalized, oftentimes taken advantage at all levels, and they don't get paid, and they don't even have, for instance, as you have pointed out in the past, the masks, the necessary equipment to do the work that other people get, so they're protected. Talk about, I mean, this is a travesty.
That's right. It is a travesty. Here in Sonoma County, for example, house cleaners and caregivers, the women who take care of children and the elderly inside people's private homes, are often underpaid or sometimes not paid at all. Many are, fall or injure themselves by lifting heavy furniture, and the employer turns the other way and often lets them go instead of making sure that they receive proper medical attention. And the physical violence that they are forced to endure is common, Dennis. It's a lot more common than people think. Employers, I've heard stories from the women who we work with, they get their hair pulled. There was one woman I spoke with recently, the employer kicked her in the shins. We had one caregiver who was constantly sexually harassed by her employer. And the family, whenever she reported it, would just say, that's him, that's George, that's my grandfather, he's just a silly man, and pay no attention to his advances. And of course, we know that many of these workers are undocumented. It's very difficult to find work, including post-COVID, and so many of them find themselves forced to stay working in these jobs that are exploitative and abusive. These women are just so strong and courageous. It's just unbelievable.
So they're managing other people's families, and they're taking care of their own kids. And we've talked about you've raised some of the issues around undocumented and the risks that women take and are often really punished for doing this hardest work. Then of course, there is the whole battle for citizenship in the middle of all this, and that's of course what's always that promise of citizenship, or just the green card, is what sort of just pushes them forward, hoping that they will be at a certain point relieved from this misery. But it's
that's
not
right.
It's not getting better, is it? It's not better under the Democrats, not for the people you represent.
Oh, not at all. We've had over 800 deportations, not this year under Biden, not counting the people who were sent back, who were waiting on the border at the encampments. You know, this administration has been no better than previous Republican administrations, unfortunately. But the irony is that, yeah, we're talking about this community of workers, mainly women of color, many of them undocumented. And, you know, they were forced to uproot themselves from their home countries, many of them leaving children behind to be cared for by grandparents. Some of them thought that it would be easier to bring their children once they were settled in here, but it's been very hard because we all know what the situation is at the U.S.-Mexico border. And then here they are, these same women are caring for the children of people who have the means to pay them and are often treated, you know, worse than the household pets. They're viewed with such disdain, and they're dehumanized, and that is in large part the reason why these employers, who are namely private homeowners, you know, it's not to say that they're all like this, because we have some employers who are just remarkable and are part of the domestic worker movement. But the exploiters and the abusers, you know, when I talk to them, they're just crazy, you know, saying, well, I'm not going to pay that domestic worker because she couldn't show me a Social Security card, which they don't legally have to. You know, the workers get injured on the job and they're just terminated, and that's it. The relationship is cut off. So it's an industry that is essential in our country, and yet these workers still don't receive the rights and the protections that all other workers do, including here in California, which includes the health and safety. So day to day, let me just say one other thing. Here in Sonoma County, day to day, these house cleaners, women of color, many of them undocumented, are the ones who clean family homes. They're the ones that clean the Airbnb rental homes, which many families profit from. They're the ones who clean the messes after the wildfires and other disasters. They are hired by sometimes small companies or private homeowners to do the dangerous work of cleaning the moss and going into the burnt homes to smell the chemicals, and using the toxic cleaning chemicals. They suffer from rashes and respiratory disease and other forms of physical damage. So that's basically what's happening on the ground, Dennis. And the exciting part, as you know, is that domestic workers have been organizing now for decades here in California. They have local organizations, they have a statewide coalition, and they have a national domestic worker alliance. And I think that is what is the beautiful piece of all this, is that these women, as they have historically, Historically, it's been African-American women, Latinx women, Filipina, and other API women who have really come together and pushed the needle on making sure that this industry, that these workers receive the protections and the rights and the power that they deserve. And this is where tomorrow's picket comes in.
Well, I want you to tell us all about that. But before you do, you're talking about the dangers that these women face, and that's before they speak up. Obviously, after they speak up, the danger doubles and triples. Tell us about, and it takes a lot of courage to speak up. Tell us about, I think her name is Daisy Lopez. She spoke up, didn't she?
She sure did. Daisy Lopez is a leader of Almas Libres here in Sonoma County. She has worked on many of these political campaigns that I have mentioned against all of the exploitation and abuses. And what happened to her back in spring of 2020 is that she was cleaning a home, a good-sized home in Sebastopol, here in the middle of wine country, wealthy wine country. And she was cleaning the home of this employer, and the employer decided not to pay her last check before she left. And she argued with us throughout the months and months that we tried to negotiate with her. She kept saying that Daisy was not her employee, that rather she was an independent contractor and therefore didn't deserve overtime pay. It's something that many employers assert, sometimes not knowing the difference between what an employee and an independent contractor is, not knowing that house cleaners are predominantly employees and deserve to be paid overtime for their extra hours. But she kept insisting that not only was she an independent contractor, but she needed to produce a social security number, which Daisy could not. And even though, you know, we very patiently told this employer, her name is Christine Siqueiros from Sebastopol, California. She said that she would not pay Daisy because she would not produce a Social Security number, even when we explained to her that a worker does not need to produce a Social Security number by law and must be paid legally for all the hours that they worked. Because we weren't able to negotiate with them, the employer, it's very common that these cases go before the California Labor Commissioner, and the State Labor Commissioner holds a settlement conference and then a formal hearing, and then there's a judgment entered just like any other civil case in the county superior court, which is what happened in Daisy's case. So in her case, there was an entry of judgment for over $4,600 in unpaid wages and some penalties. And the employer still refuses to pay Daisy her unpaid wages. I don't know if it's
so there's no enforcement.
Get away with it.
What's the enforcement process?
Theoretically, there's supposed to be enforcement. For example, the labor commissioner has authority to enforce these cases. The problem is that the state labor commissioner, because these cases are so common, they're so backed up that right now cases are taking over a year to be heard by administrative law judge. Daisy, for example, filed her claim in April 2020, and she did not receive a determination until January of 2022. We're now in 2023. We've been, you know, we've reached the attorney for the employer. We've heard nothing. We've received nothing. And so now, you know, we have to implement political strategies beyond the legal ones, because the legal ones take a long time. She's already waited for 3 years for the wages that she earned, and many times they can be costly. And for your average house cleaner, it's not realistic. So the type of organizing that Almas Libres does addresses this imbalance of power between employers and low-wage workers. Yes. The workers go through the legal process. So, and many times we've been successful, employers pay. But in cases like Daisy, some employers think that they can still get away with it because of the workers' immigration status, because the workers are dehumanized. And so along with continuing this long and arduous legal process, the workers are organized, and they also implement political strategies to try to pressure these employers to do the right thing.
So tell us, you've got a Valentine's Day action plan, that's tomorrow. What are you going to be doing to support all the love and the heart and the whole spirit of Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
I guess you're doing something with the yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Daisy Lopez is going to stand in front of Kristen Sicaro's home in Sebastopol and say during a peaceful picket, "Where's the love? Where's the love on this Valentine's Day? Why aren't you paying me my wages that an administrative law judge decided were legally and rightly mine, and this decision or order or judgment is now entered into at the superior court level, which means that she cannot appeal. Where is the love?" And we have dozens of other house cleaners and caregivers, members of Almas Libres, who will always be there unconditionally for one another, because they're organized through their organization, and they will be there at the picket. We have many, many ally organizations and unions that will also be there. And I'll tell you, Dennis, you know, I've done many of these throughout the decades, and almost always they work, because the employer sees that the worker is not alone, that the worker has community support, and they don't want to be publicly exposed. So we're hoping that tomorrow at the picket, which begins at 8 in the morning at 2011 Cooper Road in Sebastopol, Sonoma County, that people will come join us and support Daisy and all other house cleaners who provide an essential service in our economy by caring for our most prized possessions, our homes, our children, our elders. And if we disrespect them by not paying them or exploiting them or not ensuring their health and safety on the job, then we're not only hurting low-wage immigrant women, we're hurting ourselves, because a lot of people in our community, especially in a wealthy community like Sonoma County, depend on that industry.
Amazing. We've been speaking with Renee Salcedo. I have to ask you, where's the governor stand on all this? What, has he played a negative role in the unfolding of this struggle and the plight that people face?
Well, very interesting that you ask this, Dennis, because do you remember I mentioned that domestic workers here in California still do not receive health and safety protections as other workers do under Cal OSHA rules. Historically, domestic workers have been women of color, and these protections have been denied to this industry, right? Because they're always perceived as traditional women's jobs. Women's role is to caretake and to clean people's homes. So the state legislature has not yet passed legislation which would include domestic workers under these vital and necessary protections, especially now with the wildfires, the floods, and the other natural disasters. Governor Newsom, when the California Domestic Worker Coalition introduced a bill to include domestic workers under these basic health and safety protections, he vetoed our bill and then threatened to veto it a second time. And right now, what is happening is that in the state process, there are workers and others working on a series of guidelines that employers can follow voluntarily. But unfortunately, it has no teeth. So eventually, we have to pass a law which will get rid of this exclusion of house cleaners and caregivers. And Governor Newsom should do the right thing and sign it. There's no reason why he shouldn't sign it. Domestic workers do work. They do jobs just like any other jobs. This is not an informal economy, nor should it be considered one. This is a very formal industry inside the community of essential workers. And, you know, Governor Newsom should be ashamed of himself, Dennis, for vetoing this legislation. So hopefully, I think, you know, thanks to the statewide coalition and all the various local chapters, I think eventually this law will pass, but it won't be because of the governor. It'll be because of the hard organizing work of domestic workers themselves.
And we just have an extra minute because we're trying to connect with our next guest. And so I wanted to ask you, just generally, Renee, you're somebody who's dealt with this from, again, all sides. What you've seen unfolding through, I mean, we've seen it from Clinton and through the crew and the Bushes and the whole thing. We've seen Trump and now Biden. Immigration. Isn't it still sort of the wish that's never going to come true? I haven't seen a politician who, once they get in office, really take it on. And Biden, you have to admit, he's pretty damn bad when it comes to border policy.
Absolutely, Dennis. I agree with your analysis 100%. Throughout the decades that I've been working inside the immigrant rights movement, the immigrant worker movement, Democrats and Republicans alike, some more egregiously than others, they have both not only passed anti-immigrant legislation and policies and spewed anti-immigrant rhetoric, which leads to further dehumanization, but they have also not supported the calls of our community for a just immigration reform, the opportunity for people to be able to adjust their status or apply for legal residency under a reasonable process. You know, the scapegoating that we saw in the late 80s and early 90s, we still see it today. But fortunately, the good news is that communities, immigrant communities, are better organized today. And so even if we cannot rely on elected officials to keep their word, the Democrats, when the Biden administration took office, promised that immigration reform would be on the top of the list, and immigrant rights. But of course, they have failed us once again. Human rights are not being respected at the U.S.-Mexico border. Human rights are not being respected inland every time someone is deported. And human rights are not respected when millions of undocumented migrants, they have their families here, they've worked here, they have their lives here, aren't offered an opportunity to be able to apply for legal residency. So right now, the undocumented community continues to push, and from my perspective, they've gotten closer than they ever have. Right now, we're pushing a piece of legislation, a specific piece of legislation that we call the Registry Bill, which would permit approximately 8 million undocumented migrants to be able to apply for legal residency as long as they live in the country continuously for 7 years. We think that's fair, and we don't want attached to any legalization policy all the other policies that cause our people to suffer, like E-Verify, like the expansion of guest worker programs, which only exploits workers, like the detention centers. The detention centers have to close down. It's just plain and simple, it's a human rights issue. And I can't say it's very much connected to our work, because the members of Almas Libres are helping to spearhead a regional coalition here in Northern California, pushing for just immigration reform. And we've been very close working with our partners in Los Angeles and across the country. We're not giving up. We're organizing to create the political climate so that a just immigration reform can pass when the time is right, even though right now Congress is made up predominantly by Republicans. We're still organizing. Why? Because the undocumented community is still demanding it.
Right, and that battle continues. We have been speaking with Renee Salcedo, a good friend of this show, and somebody who's always got the most significant information that we all need to know about. Renee, if people want more information about the work that you do, remind them again, of course, if you want, what you'd like them to do, how they might want to participate in any struggle that you're a part of. How can they follow along and see what's going on?
Yes. If you can't come out and join us tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. at 2011 Cooper Road in Sebastopol, please feel free to take a look at our Facebook page. It is at Almas Libres, /Raices Collective. And that's how you can reach us. You can see all the campaigns and all the work that the workers are doing. And we'll plug you in.
Thank you. Thank you, Renee. Always appreciate it. We've been speaking with Renee Salcedo. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We have been trying to reach our guest in the other part of the world known as Pakistan, but we're having trouble getting through. I'm going to see if we can get our guests on early. We've got Cynthia Papermaster, and also she has managed to get in touch with Ray McGovern, and he's got some interesting stuff to say. Stay with us. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. It's a bit of a reunion. I've got a very big smile on my face because I used to be a drummer, so timing is everything. Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern joins us from Washington, D.C. He used to work for the CIA a long time ago. He used to brief presidents. And also joining us is Cynthia Papermaster, and I think they're both, if I got this right, they're both a part of upcoming protests, Rage Against the War Machine. We're going to hear all about that. Let me bring you in first, Ray, because I can think about 100 questions I want to ask you. But welcome back to Flashpoints.
Well, got a smile on my face too, Dennis. Good to be back.
Matchmaker, match. So, listen. What do you think of Seymour Hersh's story it was the West and the U.S. that destroyed the pipeline that Russia was planning for Europe? You believe that?
Dennis, I was shocked. The only thing that made any sense, I mean, the wherewithal to do it, the motive to do it, bragging about it after they did it. Come on, you know, give me a break. It was really easy. The big story here, Dennis, and this is close to what your profession is all about, is how long the New York Times and the other captivated media are going to be able to keep it out of the public consciousness. Because I was talking to some folks up in New York, good friends of mine, highly educated. They hadn't heard of Hersh's article, and it'll be really interesting to see if they can keep it suppressed ad infinitum.
Would you sum it up for us, please?
Sure. Well, Cy points out that it was the U.S., CIA, Navy divers who reconnoitered how to blow up these this pipeline that delivered Russian gas to Germany in the first instance, and then to the rest of Europe. It was sort of like the bloodline, sort of a lifeline to them. And so they blew it up, and they were pretty clumsy about it because the President of the United States and the Under Secretary of State bragged about blowing up before they blew it up. So as I heard this today, Dennis, he says, you know, it was not a difficult story to find a source for. And that is the nice story. A whistleblower who knew about all this and had firsthand knowledge went to Cy because he knew that Cy protects his sources, right? And he said, in effect, look, I swore a solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I can't abide this. I'm going to honor that oath. This is what happened. I don't care about some little contract I made about keeping classified information secret. That's a little contract. It dwells in proportion to the solemn oath I took to the Constitution. That's what this is all about. And Cy is the best of the best. I describe him as meticulous to a fault. if that's
what we're talking about, Seymour Hersh. For those just tuning in, we're talking about Seymour Hersh. He was I believe he was the one who won the Pulitzer for My Lai, the reporting the My Lai massacre. Extensive reporting, sort of blowing the cover on the U.S. war machine, like somebody else we're trying to defend now, named Julian Assange. That's sort of a segue. But let me bring in Cynthia Papermaster, who is Code Pink San Francisco, along with a whole bunch of other amazing people, and they are part of something. I think you're a part of. It's going to be a national action, Rage Against the War Machine. So, Cynthia, why don't you remind us what the rage is all about? What are you raging about? What are you outraged about?
Oh, wow. Where do I start? Good to be on. Hi, Ray. we have 9 demands for this rage, including not one more penny for war in Ukraine, abolishing NATO. I mean, it goes on and on. And one of the demands
is to free Julian Assange political prisoners. And it includes, Mumia Abu-Jamal and Leonard Peltier. There's so many political prisoners. So we're raging, but actually it's going to be kind of a party. Like, think back to the 60s or think about Occupy. That wasn't so long ago. And we're still here. And we really want to get something going where people feel like they're empowered. So we're inviting everybody who is going to be the victim of a nuclear war, and that's everybody, including dogs, dogs and children. And we're just inviting them to gather with us at noon next Sunday, the 19th, at the Embarcadero Plaza, which is right across from the San Francisco Ferry Building, which is a beautiful spot to gather for a party. And we'll have music, poetry, speakers, children's activities, dogs gathering together. It'll just be a wonderful, loving, sort of revolutionary rage. And then we're parading. We're having a parade to the financial district where there's a Lockheed Martin office. And, you know, Lockheed Martin, they're my favorite merchant of death. They're the biggest and the most profitable. And we're just going there to rage for about an hour, and then we're going to Nancy Pelosi's house. And I know a lot of people are shocked, absolutely shocked to hear that. But we have to go to where the actual rage machine funder lives. You know, she writes the checks, is how I like to put it. There wouldn't be any war machine without her funding of the war machine. So I'm going to stop right there.
That's Cynthia Papermaster of Code Pink San Francisco. She's talking about action rage against the war machine. We're also delighted to have with us, thank you, Cynthia, Ray McGovern. And in that litany of demands, Ray, is Julian Assange and freeing Julian Assange. We now know that your old agency planned to kill him. Why is Assange so dangerous, and why is the New York Times so peepee-mouthed about speaking up about one of their colleagues? Ray?
Uh-oh.
Cynthia, are you still with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We're having some phone problems, so could you speak up or somehow rearrange? Maybe it's a connection. And say more. While we're trying to get Ray back, say a little bit more about who you're hoping to show up. I think we've got Francisco committed now, right? That you have got Francisco Herrera, the great troubadour, singing the Julian Assange song?
Yes, he's on the stage. We also have Cindy Sheehan and Shahid Buttar, both of whom ran against Nancy Pelosi for Congress. We have a lot of hopefuls that we're going to have you, perhaps you. So, everything is kind of like, look, I just want to confess something right here. I am not a large event organizer by profession. I'm a Code Pink volunteer. And so I'm doing the best I can, and I have a wonderful group of people.
You're doing a great job.
Thank
you. Kidding me? I can't turn in any direction, east, west, north, south, and not see rage against the war machine. I think we've got Ray back. And Ray, the question that you dropped out for, everybody in my audience is thinking it was a CIA. Knock him off quick before he gets a chance to talk about why Julian Assange is important and why you suppose the New York Times is so damn weak-kneed and afraid to stand up for somebody who did the right thing when it comes to journalism. What is he so, why are they so afraid of him, right?
Well, because he found a technologically innovative way to spread the truth around. I mean, it's that simple. The mainstream media, as you know better than most, Dennis, has been compromised. It's peopled now by people who make their money by doing what they're told to say and all that kind of thing. So Here's Julian, a brilliant fellow. I have to confess, I'm a friend of his, okay? I know him real well. I know
few
people as smart as he is, okay? Now, he figured out a way to let whistleblowers get their information to him directly, like from his computer, right? And that's what Chelsea Manning did as a private in the Army. They showed that the U.S. was killing people right and left, running people over and then gloating about it. These were people that were captured in this helicopter that was flying over a place during the so-called surge in Iraq in 2007. So, you know, this just can't be tolerated. And the whole name of the game now is to make an example of him, to say, we don't care if you're Australian or if you're from Zambia, we're going to get you because we're the United States. We have extraterritorial powers, and so if they live in Greenland or Antarctica, we're going to get you, and we're going to put you in prison for the rest of your life if you tell the truth and it embarrasses the United States. That's the long and short of it. The lurid thing, Dennis, that most people don't know, is that the way they got a hold of Julian in Stockholm, okay, what happened was, he went to bed with two women, okay? And the two women were concerned because there was a condom not working or something. And they went to the police in Sweden, and I said, now, can we get Julian can we force him to take an AIDS test? And the answer was, well, let's look into it. Next thing you know, top of the press, Julian Assange accused of rape. That's how they get you. That's the quiver. And that's the arrow in the quiver of the deep state. That's how they got a hold of him, and he was in prison or virtually in prison ever since. That's 2010, for God's sake. So we gave him the Sam Adams Award for excellence in journalism and speaking up. And, you know, it's really sad to see him languishing in this way, but it's all, you know, it's all per script. It's an intimidation technique. So people like you and people otherwise inclined to tell the truth will be really careful, because what happened to Julian could happen to you.
Oh, and that's the interesting thing, that the little peeps out of the corners of the mouths of the attorneys for the New York Times admit that if they can prosecute Julian, they can prosecute anybody at the Times, and they can figure out a way to do it. And I know you understand, and people at Consortium News understand now, that perhaps this is the worst time in modern history for censorship. And it's happening to all the friends and all the great journalists who I know are struggling with this at many different levels, because if you try and tell the truth and it doesn't fit with conventional wisdom, you know what happens. So speaking of the truth, what do you think about the latest, I'm sort of calling it the Hindenburg scandal? We're shooting balloons now. I mean, I'm a little nervous, Ray, I have to tell you, to contextualize it, I'm nervous, because you had that dude in the Pentagon, the general, saying we're about to go to war with China, and then we're shooting balloons. But does this worry you?
Well, as long as they're just balloons, I don't mind, actually. Yeah. they say what? History ends in tragedy and then farce or something like this. You know, the Chinese said today, look, 20 U.S. balloons flew over China in the last couple of years. It shoot any of them down, for God's sake. This is the intelligence agencies doing what they think they can and pushing the envelope. The Chinese, for whatever reason, pushed the envelope. I don't believe for a second that unexpected headwinds blew that balloon over the United States. No, they wanted to see what they could accomplish. And it was a little embarrassing, since NORAD didn't realize what was going on for a day or two later.
So, it was going too slow.
So, you know, for them to be shooting balloons or objects, what's an object? I don't know. They don't know either. That's why they call it a rectangular or a hexagonic object. They shot it down. And what do these shoot downs cost? Well, each one of these jet planes, not only the fuel, but the missile itself costs a multiple of $1 million. So maybe the Chinese will keep sending a lot of balloons, so we waste all that money. I wish I could take it more seriously, but I cannot at this time. It is a reflection of the Cold War we have with China. And here's the Chinese. And, you know, the Chinese have always said, can't we get along? I mean, like, can't there be a win-win situation here? And Joe Biden says, no. First thing he says about China, first speech, China wants to be the preeminent power in the world. That's not going to happen on my watch. His words. So why can't they be the preeminent power? Why does the U.S. always have to be exceptional, or, you know, even, well, exceptional is what the word is. So, you know, we're not exceptional anymore. We have to realize that because of the Ukraine thing, the world is now divided. Now, people say multipolar. I say bipolar, and not only in the psychiatric sense. It's bipolar in this sense, seriously. It's the lily white West, NATO, against people of color who comprise 80% of the people in the world, including Russians, okay? Russians, China, India, Argentina, South Africa, Brazil, for God's sake. They're all up in arms because they don't like the way they've been treated by this hegemon that used to be able to swing its whatever, okay, cojones, if you will. Now it can no longer do that, and that's the outcome of all this. It's going to take a year or two more, but the dollar is going to fall, and, you know, the empire is going to fall, and how softly it falls really depends on us, if we can get prepared and let our people know that, you know, this doesn't have to be. The Chinese are not after us, neither are the Russians. That may put me in Putin's pocket or Xi Jinping's pocket, but, you know, that's a safer place to be when everything falls apart.
All right, Lenny, that's Ray McGovern, and beautiful. I love having you on, Ray. Also with us is Cynthia Papermaster. She is my honorary co-host for this series about Rage Against the War Machine. What did you, you have any questions for Ray or things you want to add?
Yeah. Yes. Being somebody who actually thinks the threat of nuclear war is a real thing and having trouble sleeping or functioning, I wanted to ask Ray about something I heard him say recently on a Schiller Institute webinar. Ray, you said something about having the Pope intervene for the sake of defusing the threat of nuclear war, somehow sending emissaries, or I'd like to hear more about that strategy. Thank you.
Yeah, the idea is that, you know, there's precedent for this. John Paul II sent a big league cardinal who was a friend of the Bush family. His name was Pio Lahi. He sent them to talk to George Bush and Dick Cheney right before the attack on Iraq in March of 2003, 3 weeks before. And Pio Lahi talked about it for 4 months later and said, you know, I tried to talk to this guy and he kept saying, well, you know, democracy, we've got to have democracy in Iraq. He said, no, I'm here to give you a message from the Pope. And the Pope says he doesn't believe that Al-Qaeda is in Iraq. He doesn't believe that there are weapons of mass destruction. Do you have the evidence? Could you show the Pope? I'm his emissary. And Bush would not do that. So this guy goes home, and Bush starts the war 3 weeks later. So my idea is, well, hey, Francis, you say you're willing to mediate or make Vatican offices available for mediation. Why don't you send somebody around, not only to Washington, but to Kiev. Send them to Paris and Berlin, and ask them why the French and the Germans sabotaged the agreement that was made so Russia would not have to invade Ukraine. Ask them about that. Get your emissaries out there and come back. And then maybe you can do something really sensible by getting people together and end this damn thing, because people are dying by the hundreds every day in Ukraine.
And we're, I mean, the dangers of a nuclear conflagration that, you know, we're Chernobyl and forward, what's going on is really terrifying. Dennis Bernstein here with Cynthia Papermaster. We're speaking with Ray McGovern, former high-level CIA officer who briefed presidents, including Bush 1, right? Is my mind still working right?
Bush, that's one. Correct, yeah. You know, Dennis, I was reminiscing. Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just saying, you know, I know Bush 1 real well. I worked for him at the agency as well as when he was, I briefed him every other day. You know, when the Iron Curtain fell, when the Berlin Wall fell, my God, he had the right instincts. He said, let's have a Europe free. Let's free and complete all the way from Lisbon to Vladivostok. I retired at that point. I said, this whole caucus looks like it's going to be a peace dividend. And what happened? Well, you know what happened. And it wasn't the Russians' fault. We reneged on a whole host of promises, and we finally pretty much provoked, and this is the word, the invasion of Ukraine was not unprovoked, and I can prove it. We provoked Putin into doing this.
Wow. Well, that's part two. We're just about out of time. Cynthia, why don't you tell people how they can participate if they'd like. They might want to have the information, or they might want to tell other folks. And then after we do that, Ray, I'm going to play for you an anthem I wrote for Julian Assange with my good friend Francis Collette. I don't know if you heard it yet, but Cynthia, first.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dennis. I want people to view this rage as a kind of just a beautiful opportunity to get together in community and to do this raging. We don't want to be in a situation where we're afraid of a nuclear war happening. We want the bloodshed to stop in Ukraine. And so come out. Please bring your dog. If you have a nice dog, bring it along. Dress in costumes if you want to. This is a party. It's really not a protest. It's not a demonstration. It's a very welcoming sort of community gathering. And I think the Occupy is still here with us. If you were part of Occupy, if you were part of anti-war things in the past, or if you were with any kind of issue, we're all going to be gone if we have a nuclear war. We have to stop it. So let's rage together. Let's not be silent now. We can't afford
and
to be
website?
Silent. The website is.
Website?
I'm going to send them to Rage Against the War Machine. You just Google that, and you'll find it right away.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon, Cynthia Papermaster. Thank you. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Here's part of that anthem I wrote with Francisco Herrera for Julian Assange.
As a journalist, I saw that we could achieve a lot of reform with a little bit of work. In some cases, one classified video can possibly stop a war.
A military chopper opens fire. Instruments of genocide. WikiLeaks unmask the lie. Central Command, gunsight video nails the murder scene down. Julian told the truth about the war machine. It's getting late in the hour, don't wait another minute to speak truth to power. Up in flames, Baghdad on fire. Julian Assange gave that a name.
It up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Here at KBOO, on February 20th, we'll be celebrating National Love Your Pet Day. If you ever experienced the loss of an animal friend, you are welcome to share with us how you felt and how it changed you to